Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to Friday. We like to call it Fri-yay around here. In fact, let's don't even delay. Let's just kick off with our favorite sound effect of all. Hit me some Fri-yay sound effect. Go for it. Fri-yay! Outstanding. All right, well, you are at the end of the week right now. We're going to get you all the way to go home time on a Friday afternoon. And pushing the buttons in expert fashion, JP on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. I like the poof, the bomb.
It has an effect.
Yeah, it does.
It does. It sets a tone for the show. You doing good?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good. We're going to have some sports with you later on.
Yep, there we go.
All right, we'll get her done. All right, we got a great show laid on for you, a good slate of folks. So, yeah, at 3 o'clock today, U.S. Senator Katie Britt calling in. We'll get an update from her on where she sees things happening in campaign season, what's happening up in D.C. And I want to get her thoughts, really, too, as what she's thinking and what she's hearing in D.C. about Israel taking out Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar yesterday. So U.S. Senator Katie Britt calling in 3 o'clock. 3:30 today, GOP Chairman John Wall. He's a state party chairman for the entire state of Alabama. Chairman Wall will be on with us at 3:30, so stand by for that one. We'll get updates from him from Political World. And then at 4 o'clock today, there it is, JP on Sports. We'll get a prelude for the weekend. Keep in mind, JP's got his own show called Off the Bench on Saturday mornings on the Ump in Huntsville. But we'll get a little advance notice of what he's seeing coming for the weekend. JP on Sports, 4 o'clock. And then I still got a triple dipper. Just hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, smell the fear. Man, can you smell the fear? I do. The Democrats are scared to death right now. You can smell the fear from here. I mean, they have lost momentum. They are losing the messaging. They're losing the voters. And you can smell the fear. That's number one, Triple Dipper. I'll give you some anecdotal reasons why I believe that's true. JP and I were just talking right before we went on the air. You can feel a shifting in the momentum right now. Number two on the Triple Dipper, True the Vote. So True the Vote. We didn't get to it yesterday, but I'm going to tell you, there's even some new stuff that I added to the materials that I already had. But True the Vote means basically making sure the votes are accurate, well counted, and that everyone has a chance to cast their vote. How do we know we're true in the vote? What kind of things are being done to potentially corrupt the vote? We'll talk about all of it. True the vote, number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, I had to throw something in that was non-politics. Just needed to. Fake meat. Oh, geez. Yeah, we're going there. I got an entire thing, the Triple Dipper number three, fake meat, real problems. Okay, listen, you may be chagrined to find out that they're actually planning on potentially feeding our U.S. troops fake meat grown in a Petri dish. I'm not a fan. We'll talk about all of that if we can get to it today. If not, we're going to save that one because it's a good one. Fake meat, real problems, number three, Triple Dipper. All right, well, let me jump into today's opening monologue, the Right Side Way. As always, we open with comments and commentary. And I got to tell you, a phrase that I think is very apropos right now is lead, follower, get out of the way. I mean, you probably heard the phrase before. Depending on whose opinion you value more, the phrase has been attributed over to time to like Thomas Paine, General George Patton, even Lee Iacocca. Whoever it was that said, lead, follower, get out of the way, I would hazard the guess that it came from somebody with a strong personality, a sense of mission, the need to get something very important done. I mean, it sounds a little bit like a rebellion phrase, right? But I would also say that lead, follower, get out of the way is in fact a leadership phrase. The kind of thing that gets said by the person who is not only has a strong personality, but the confidence to actually put their actual intent into action. Someone who sees a situation that needs immediate action, lead, follower, get out of the way, is the kind of phrase that's said by someone who knows that action must be taken quickly with a sense of organized and yet reckless abandon. Somebody who knows that the consequences of doing nothing could be far worse. So yeah, lead, follow, or get out of the way. It's a demand phrase. It's a logjam breaking phrase. It's a call to action. It's also not always popular because it tells other people at a peer level, even those of a superior rank, that they are the problem. You don't tell subordinates to lead, follow, or get out of the way. That's a phrase that one general tells to other generals, or that a business leader tells to his board of directors, or that a president tells to Congress. It's not only a statement of intent, it's an actual rebuke to those who had the opportunity to fix something, but for some reason they've chosen not to. And the person who says it, lead, follower, get out of the way. Sometimes it just takes one person to launch the change with the attitude, with the authority, and with the wherewithal to not only say to others that they should lead, follow, or just get out of the way, but that the person who's saying it can actually act on it. Look, in my opinion, America is right now at an inflection point. In every way imaginable, we are at a point where a turning is needed, fiscally, militarily, politically, socially, culturally, spiritually. We've been ravaged in the past 4 years from the pandemic and its big government policies that resulted. Social upheaval with riots and immorality, political polarization, open borders creating chaos in our streets, massive government spending and economic stagnation coupled with inflation. And this election, y'all, is about whether we will turn back from the cliff or just take the plunge off into the abyss. And I'm not trying to be dramatic or just launch into some hyperbole. I want our country back. I want the U.S. to be the shining city on a hill, to promote peace through strength, to have a vibrant economy that leads the world in productivity. This election is about all of that, which means that this election is about leadership. It's not just an election of a personality, but an election of leadership. What we need right now is someone who has the ability to come in and, with conservative principles in place, tell the rest of the folks to lead, follow, or get out of the way. Now, Victor Davis Hanson is an American scholar. I know some of you all have heard of him. He's a historian. He's an author. He's a senior fellow with the Hoover Institute. And I've said before that every time I listen to him speak, I feel like I gain points on my IQ. I mean, the guy is just brilliant. Hanson wrote a book that I really like. It's called The Savior Generals. It's a study of five historic generals that Hanson believes stepped into a losing military campaign, and by the sheer force of their will, by their individual ability to plan and strategize and cajole and convince and execute, that those single generals in and of themselves turned the tide. That these particular generals, they were the sole catalyst for snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, but they were also not very popular for having done so. Hanson said the book was designed to show how, he said, his quote, contrarian and unpopular generals have often saved the day defying the odds to win a campaign, sometimes an entire war. I saw a review of his book, and it talked about the fact that his look back over 2,600 years, which detailed, by the way, the events of Themistocles, Belisarius, Sherman, Ridgway, Petraeus, that Hanson said those five generals in his book, they all had common traits. His quote, they all enjoyed their reputations for bucking conventional wisdom. They were all highly literate, well-spoken, and they all led by example. Each one of those so-called savior generals that Hanson wrote about, they were men who forged their own path and who knew that without victory, there was going to be no chance of survival. One book review that I read about Hanson's book pointed out that despite each one of those men being the right man for the right time, that they were also not very popular. It is said that Themistocles was subjected to trumped-up charges of corruption. Belisarius, he lost his marriage and fell out of favor with the emperor. Sherman, well, you know about Sherman, he was branded by many as a terrorist because he burned his way to the sea. He had trouble getting along with people. Ridgway was forced to resign as the chief of staff from President Eisenhower. And then Petraeus, well, he resigned as director of the CIA because of an extramarital affair. So yeah, they were all flawed men, but yet they were great leaders. They were leaders who were needed for their time. So what does it take to be that person? I mean, who else has actually stood up and done what needed to be done at just the right time for just the right reasons with just the right plan, who actually had the moxie to tell those around him to lead, follow, or get out of the way? Oh, there have been others. I remember back a few years ago reading a great book, 1776, I hope some of y'all read it, by David McCullough. 1776 is an awesome read. I mean, if you love U.S. history, that book, 1776, it'll give you so much insight into the depth and the breadth of what actually had to happen for the original 13 colonies to become the future United States of America. But one thing that struck me more than anything when I read the book, I had never realized until I read it, was that General George Washington actually had to beg the Continental Congress to stay the course. Can you imagine? I mean, to be sure, there were other patriots, there were other heroes of the Revolution. But I had always envisioned the entire Continental Congress, those great men who signed the Declaration of Independence, as all being unwavering and steady and without any doubts. But no, they apparently had some stalwarts in the bunch, but they, as a group, struggled and debated, and some of them even wavered. But Washington saw a way forward. He wrote to the Congress urging them to stay in the fight. I got to thinking about it. What if it had been another man in charge of the Continental Army? Is it possible that Washington's influence actually made that much of a difference? I think history would say that if you study it, yeah, it did. So like I said before, I believe the United States, this country that we all love, is at a crucial point in history. We're now in the place where we have to ask the question, what kind of nation do we want to be? Should the average person in America believe the government is there for them? Or will we be a nation in which the government presses down its influence against anybody who dares to question it? Are we a nation who values the sanctity of life? Are we a nation who appreciates the simple fact that a man is a man and a woman is a woman? Are we a nation that stands for freedom and liberty and one that our allies know will have their back? Are we a nation that understands the value of our dollar and that fiscal responsibility and big spending don't always mean the same thing? The only way that I believe that we're going to win this fight as conservatives is if we stay the course and if we elect the kind of people to represent us who will say to those around them, they can lead, follow, or get out of the way, but we're going to fix America. Looking back at Hansen's book again, I'll just wrap up with this. One of those men who was featured in Hansen's book was General Ridgway. Over time, history began to take a little more note about his efforts and successes in World War II, and despite the fact that he fell out with Eisenhower after the war, many years later, President Ronald Reagan actually awarded General Ridgway the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And on May 12th of 1986, while speaking at the presentation ceremony, Reagan said, "Heroes come when they're needed, and great men step forward when courage seems to be short in supply." I'd say that we're in that time. I'd say that we need great men to step forward, because right now, it seems like courage is too often in short supply. We need some brassy leadership to say to those who are flagging and flailing and ducking for cover, they need to lead, follow, or get out of the way. Because it's about our country. It's about leadership. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, there you have it. Great book, by the way, Save Your Generals. If you haven't read it, I encourage you highly to read it. And then 1776, whew, what a great book that is. Listen, I really do believe this is a time, a turning time, a time when we have to elect leadership that is willing to break things in order to fix things, if you know what I mean. It's time to say lead, follow, or get out of the way. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. Saving the world, one soundbite at a time. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. You can actually text it or call it, same number for both. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Man, we got a bunch of people already texting in. Let me see what we got here. Allie from Athens says, "Preach it, Colonel Williams." Thank you, Allie. I appreciate you. Shorty from Anderson says, "Phil, that was a strong and powerful monologue." Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Hugh from Huntsville says, "Great monologue, on course for an A triple plus day." The Reagan quote pushes it to an A quadruple plus. Nice. Can't hurt to ever call in Reagan. Steve from Tennessee says, "A bit off topic, but I went to early vote in Tennessee 2 days in a row and left both times because the crowd was huge." He said, "Something is up." Steve from Tennessee. Wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, I'm wondering. I may have to, I hope that I can be through voting in time to get on the air at 2 o'clock on election day. That's
yeah. I'm glad I did mine via absentee ballot.
Moved, so you had to.
I'm still registered in Huntsville, but I'm glad that that's out of the way. I don't have to worry about any hiccups. But
nice, you got it delivered and all, right?
Yep,
outstanding. John from Huntsville, "Phil, awesome monologue. Also, did you hear that early voting has begun in Louisiana, Hawaii, and Washington?" And then he comments on how good you are, JP. So,
thank you.
Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, "Phil, this is a time we need good leaders." And then he says some nice things about me. Thank you, Jeff Rowe. I appreciate that, man. No. Anyway, but I'm humble and I appreciate that. Thank you very much, man. So here's the thing. We're gonna jump in. How long is that clip that I've got? That first audio clip?
A minute and a half.
We might. How much time do we have right now?
We got time. We got about 2.5 minutes.
So listen. Here's the thing. My first dipper is called "Smell the Fear." Right. I really believe that Democrats are just beside themselves right now. They are. You can smell their fear. I mean, it's almost like, holy cow, they're putting off an aroma of fear. And you can also sense a change in the momentum. When I see things like Steve from Tennessee saying he's been to early voting twice and the lines are so long, you know, you're seeing that in other states. There's a momentum to the polls right now. You're also seeing, in my opinion, a momentum in the polling right now. In fact, JP, you were telling me yesterday, I forgot to look at it, but you said Real Clear Politics had Trump up in all the battleground states right now?
Yeah, the Real Clear Politics, which encompasses a lot of different polls.
Yeah, it aggregates them, yeah.
They have him winning every battleground state right now.
Listen, a little bit of a grain of salt, but at the same time, that's a clear indication. And then you've got just the sense of things. Sometimes you can just sense it. I'll use that clip right after the break, I think, at this point. But sometimes you can just sense it. I'll never forget, just in my own limited experience of running for office at the state Senate level, you get to where you can tell when the momentum is out there. Something about the way things feel. It's like there's a dynamic in the air. And you pick up on the nuances of things. And I'm telling you right now, the nuances of things say that there's a shifting in the momentum, and the Trump campaign is having a good time right now. They just are. It's like they look relaxed. Trump's having fun again. I mean, last night, I'm going to play you a clip in a minute of him at the Alfred Smith Memorial Foundation dinner last night in New York. It was good. It was a relaxed man who's having a good time, and yet his opponent did not show up, which I'll tell you in a minute why that was a big deal. But it just feels like things are changed. And I am hopeful that means in the 18 days we have left that the Harris campaign is tanking. And you know what? As long as it tanks by about 1%, I'm good. I mean, but I would love an overwhelming win. I would love for people to say, well, Trump sure underpolled. But in the meantime, a win's a win. I don't care if it's 1 point or 10 points. A win's going to be a win. All I know is we have got to see some change in leadership. And we've got to see the ability to go back and right the ship, because otherwise I'm concerned. Becky from Shelby County says you need to be a speechwriter for President Trump. Is he hiring? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thanks, Becky. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about this one, y'all. I mean, Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, I got a stack of stuff here that I think are part of the nuances that tells you that you can smell the fear in the Democrats right now. Now, don't take anything for granted. I will tell you right now that it is possible for the Democrats to be holding back another October surprise, another Black Swan event coming in. Just keep your eyes on the prize. Go vote. Tell your friends to vote. If you haven't registered to vote and you have a deadline you haven't already passed on that, then go register and then vote. And if your friends need a ride to the polls, give them a ride to the polls. Don't let them forget. Proudly wear your I voted sticker. Show everybody you voted. I'm just saying, do not sacrifice the fact that you have been given this God-given opportunity to do what people in other countries only dream about. Vote. Now, that being said, let's go back to the dipper here. Smell the fear. Well, part of the shifting in the momentum is, like I said, the fact that you can you can feel a change in the two campaigns. Kamala is becoming far more strident. I'm watching a video of her right now just like yelling at the audience. She's like mad, shaking her finger in the air. Trump, on the other hand, is like loose, having a good time. So last night was an event called the Alfred Smith Memorial Foundation Dinner. I'm not super familiar with it. I'm getting familiar more so by getting ready for the show today, but I'll tell you what it is. It's since 1946, the Catholic Archdiocese of New York City has hosted a charity event. They hope to raise like $9 million just on last night's dinner. It's like a gala. Everybody's in, you know, tuxedo, and it's a formal dinner. Launched in 1946, they've raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for charities supporting women and children. So it's turned into like this political and cultural landmark event. Every you know, presidential season, they host it. And every presidential season, both the Democrat and Republican presidential nominee attends. And it's a roast. And you get up and you do good-natured jokes and you do self-deprecating jokes and you shake hands with people and you smile and then you get back on the campaign trail the next day. Every single Democrat has attended in modern history since 1946, except Walter Mondale, who I think in the 70s, when would Mondale run? The 70s? Anyway, bottom line is, yeah, Mondale lost huge. Because it seemed to be like an affront to the Catholic community for not showing up. It's that important. It's one of those things that when you start the campaign, you go ahead and put it on the calendar. You don't plan other events. Guess who didn't show up last night? Kamala Harris. Oh, yeah. So the woman whose campaign surrogate just did a fake version of, with the Dorito of the of Holy Communion. That didn't fly very well. The woman who is pro-abortion, so much so that it's like the centerpiece of her campaign. The woman who is pro-Palestine and says pro-Israel, but yet too often allows for Israel to get seconded to the pro-Palestinian activists in her party. I mean, and then the LGBTQ support, which goes against the Catholic teachings, really the Christian teachings. All said and done, she got some bad advice. She did not show up for the dinner. She said she was campaigning in the battleground states, although I don't know what she was really doing. And certainly, I'll tell you, nothing was more important than this. Trump went and had the best time. And let me pay. We're gonna play an audio for you here in a second. You got your thumbs up on that? You good? All right. So I'm gonna play this audio for you, but I wanna, if you haven't seen it, I need to portray. So just mental image here. You ready? Trump is up on the stage at the podium, and it's one of those situations where the head tables are kind of tiered at the podium. So everybody's sitting around the podium, and of course there's a room full of tables, people wearing tuxedos and evening dress and all. And Trump is standing there in his tuxedo, and immediately to his left, so much so that more than once he reaches down and pats him on the shoulder, is Chuck Schumer. Oh, awkward. Sitting right behind him as he speaks is none other than New York Attorney General Letitia James, who has been prosecuting him. Awkward. The room is filled with people that hate Trump, but they also really, really hate the fact that their candidate didn't show up. I say she didn't show up. She sent a video, and it was designed to be funny, and it kind of was, but it was also kind of cringe. So it's never as good as real life. Meanwhile, comedian Jim Gaffigan is the MC. Gaffigan's having a big time. Gaffigan's up there, and people are like, did he just take shots at Democrats? Yes, he did. At one point, Gaffigan goes, I'm sorry, why is Vice President Harris not here? I mean, consider this, he said. This is a room full of Catholics and Jews in New York City. This is a layup for the Democrat nominee. He said, in her defense, I mean, she did have to go ahead and appear on The View, Howard Stern, Colbert, and the longtime staple of campaigning the Call Her Daddy podcast. He says in his Gaffigan voice, you know what I think it is? I think she doesn't like me. He went on to joke about the fact that Democrats have been telling us all along that Trump's re-election is a threat to democracy, so much so they were willing to stage their own coup to get rid of their guy in order to install Kamala. Listen, then Trump got up and gave his speech. Well, I got to say this first. It also became something that, I mean, go figure that Cardinal Dolan actually has his own podcast. Everybody, all God's children got a podcast. But Cardinal Timothy Dolan has his own podcast. And he called her out on his podcast. The fact that she was snubbing them, He said, this year will be imbalanced because, sadly, Kamala Harris is not coming. It's a shame. And he went on to talk about what could have happened if she'd come. I'm going to play this clip for a few minutes. I take it back. It's only like a minute and a half, right? These are five of the best barbs that Trump delivered in his 27-minute speech. Go ahead and play it.
I used to think the Democrats were crazy for saying that men have periods, but then I met Tim Walz. Well, I'd better wrap up because Mayor Adams told me earlier that I needed to make this one very quick, especially the city has reserved this room for a large group of illegal aliens coming in from Texas. There's a group called White Dudes for Harris. Have you seen this? White Dudes for Harris. Anybody know? Are some of you here? White Dudes for Harris. Doesn't sound like it. But I'm not worried about them at all because their wives and their wives' lovers are all voting for me. A major issue in this race is child care, and Kamala has put forward a concept of a plan. A lot of people don't like it. The only piece of advice I would have for her in the event that she wins would be not to let her husband Doug anywhere near the nannies. Just keep him away.
Oh, God.
That's a nasty one. Chuck Schumer is here looking very glum. Doesn't he look glum? He looks glum. But look on the bright side, Chuck, considering how woke your party has become. If Kamala loses, you still have a chance to become the first woman president.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I watched it live. I was laughing out loud throughout most of it.
What I didn't see the whole speech. Was the whole speech like that? Was it good?
Yeah, there were a couple that fell flat. But what's funny is the ones that fell flat, Trump put his speech writer under the bus. He was like, that wasn't a good one.
But what's funny, too, that one he said about Schumer, he actually reached down and patted him on the shoulder. I mean, Schumer's sitting right there. Mm. That's just, listen, it's a clear indication for me that there's a tone right now. Trump seems to be having a good time. J.D. Vance seems to be having a good time. Trump surrogates. Elon Musk did a town hall today. He's out speaking to groups of, students and telling them, look, here's the deal. It's important. Sign up to vote. And then taking their questions. I mean, you got students who are sitting there able to ask Elon Musk questions. And overall, there is a different sense of things coming out of the Republican side, whereas on the Democrat side, I mean, there's unsubstantiated reports right now that there is a meltdown inside of the Kamala headquarters, that she completely chewed out her her chief advisor for advising her to skip the dinner last night, because they're recognizing now what a blowback they're getting out of it. That at the very least, you took a large swath of American society and you just snubbed them, and they know it. Because that dinner we just talked about, that dinner is more than just a fundraiser. In today's society, it's a landmark Catholic moment. And so the Catholic community, and just like Jews can tell when they're being snubbed in favor of pro-Palestinian supporters, and the Catholics feel snubbed from last night, and Kamala is just like absent without leave right now. She is as AWOL on that, and she's going out to where, now she did Bret Baier. She did Bret Baier. I will say this. There is still some blowback out of that. Before I go to the break, I'll give you this one, part of the Smell Their Fear piece. This is a quote. This is Democrat strategist Doug Schoen. And I'll tell you what, Doug Schoen is one of those guys who, he's a true believer in the Democrat Party. He's also one of those guys who will tell you like he sees it. He won't try to pretend they're doing good when they're not. So Doug Schoen, in an interview on Fox, Washington Examiner has the piece, Dateline yesterday. He said the Democrat Party right now is experiencing what he calls disorientation on the ground. Swing states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, he says, trouble is brewing. Harris's campaign is experiencing complications roughly 3 weeks before Election Day, Schoen said. Here's his quote. You ready? Quote, the so-called blue wall of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania is eroding for the Democrats, said Schoen on Fox News' Ingram Engel. He said there's a level of disorganization on the ground and incoherence vis-a-vis their messaging that is clear. And what I'm picking up, he said, is the Harris campaign really does not have a closing message or a strategy. And I think we saw that in Bret Baier's interview with Kamala Harris. That's a Democrat saying that. That's a Democrat saying that. Democrat John Fetterman. I've gotten to where I kind of like Fetterman. Democrat John Fetterman just said about Pennsylvania, he is warning that President Donald Trump's chances to win the state are really increasing. He said, quote, he has a special kind of place in this state. And then James Comer, Republican James Comer, said it appears there could be a panic among Democrats before Election Day, looking at things and how they're shifting the momentum, he said, in the swing states. All said and done, y'all, you can smell the fear. When we get back, I'll give you a few little nuanced issues that I see when you pick up headlines and you read between the lines. When you read between the lines, you can tell there is literally a smell of fear in the air from the Democrat side. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're in this number one of the Triple Dipper. By the way, don't forget, coming up top of the hour, we'll come back from the next break with U.S. Senator Katie Britt on the line with us. So smell the fear. Sometimes it's little stuff, right? Sometimes it's the little stuff. It's like watching people get triggered. It's like watching people do stupid. And I mean like really go all in on the stupid. Like here's somebody that's devolved into the stupid. All right. This is from Wokes By Dateline 2 days ago. Moore County, North Carolina. The Moore County, North Carolina Democratic Party, their board chairman has resigned after he was arrested for stealing pro-Donald Trump yard signs. So listen. You don't steal signs when you're winning big, right? And let me just say, I have had my signs stolen. I've had my signs cut up. I've even found my signs at the shooting range, just being used for target practice. Just saying. But people don't steal the signs if they're not at all worried about the signs. Does that make sense? And signs don't vote. That's what we used to always say. That somebody would say, Phil, you got to get some signs over there to West Etowah County. Man, ain't nobody got no signs out there. Well, you know what? Signs don't vote. I get it. But it's a visual reminder of the campaign. And so there's that. But when people start stealing signs, it's because either A, they are just so incensed, or B, they're scared. They don't want people remembering you. They don't want you to know. And so when I look at little things like this, you begin to smell the fear. That's in Moore County, North Carolina. The former Moore County Democratic Party chair, a guy named Lowell Simon, had to resign after he was arrested on Thursday and charged with two counts of removing political signs. By the way, those signs cost money. And when you go into someone's personal property to steal a sign that they got, and sometimes people bought the signs or at least were given the signs, the campaign had to pay for them. That's someone's personal property you're stealing off of their yard. So, yeah, it's a problem. I remember when my dad ran for office, there was somebody that would go along and actually use a razor and cut his signs in half. Every one of those signs costs money. But let's go bigger picture. I mean, that's one county, Phil. What does that really tell us? How about this? Joy Behar. Oh, no. Oh, yes. Joy Behar, co-host on The View. She's actually expressing worry on Wednesday about recent polling showing good outcomes for Republicans. She says this, I'm starting to worry about the polls because I see a lot of media saying that he's leading and everybody's getting nervous about that, Behar said. They're doing that on purpose because basically it's so disheartening for Democrats and people who are leaning towards Kamala to say, what are you doing? Don't buy into that. Don't buy into that. What she's trying to say is, please ignore the polls. It does. Please ignore the polls. All right. So the bottom line is this. I can look at things like Joy Behar. I can look at things like local county party chairs stealing signs because they're worried about people remembering to vote. I could think about things like this. Liberal filmmaker and activist Michael Moore, Fox News. Michael Moore is urging Vice President Kamala Harris to appeal to Arab Americans over serious concerns about losing Michigan. Michael Moore. Look, that guy is a liberal hack. But he's out there right now saying the inside words outside. He says, those of us from Michigan have serious concerns about you losing Michigan, and we can't let that happen. We fear you may not have the whole picture as we see it here on the ground. That's why we're reaching out to you. Well, let me just say, Michael Moore, Joy Behar, local party chair, Catholics who feel snubbed from the dinner last night, TikTokers having meltdowns, Kamala getting angry on the stump. The whole thing is you can smell the fear. Have I got a call on the line? I'm sorry. Line one, Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Doing okay. I've had political signs stolen, too, and everything. And depending on where I park, I've gone to magnetic stickers. That way I can take them off at night if anybody's going by.
Nice.
Put them back on the next day. But at that point, I meant it's a serious sign of weakness. Dishonoring our First Amendment by going and, well, taking them to the target range or doing that kind of thing, that means you have no confidence in yourself, and you really don't have a confidence in your want-to-be leader to be able to succeed in the election.
Yeah, it does.
You're showing your weakness.
It's cheesy. It's a cheesy, limp way of handling things, and it's a clear indication that you don't have confidence. You're right. Absolutely,
y'all,
man.
Have a good one.
See you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that thing about the signs being stolen, it's real. I mean, people do that. It irks me.
Have you seen that one video of the guy hooking up his Trump sign to somebody went up trying to take it and he got shot?
Yes, it's yes, great. I did. And I think my favorite one though was the one where the guy and the girl in the car. And he's going to run over a Trump sign. He's like, look at that Trump sign over there. I'm swinging around. I'm going to get it. He doesn't know that the person was so tired of having their Trump sign torn down that they had stood it on a nail board. And so he ran over it, flattened his tires, and then had a complete meltdown on the side of the road while his girlfriend laughed at him because she'd been trying to say, don't do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, I believe you can smell the fear, you guys. And there's things happening right now, and you can see stuff like people that are making no sense whatsoever. Like, is it related? Yes, I think it is. Story out of New York Post. I don't know if you saw the video online, but a TikToker went all in on tearing down the flags that she thought were Israeli flags in front of a restaurant, telling them this is wrong. This is genocide. There's genocide on these flags. There's genocide. Just yelling at the flag. And the guy comes out and goes, what are you doing? She goes, it's genocide. And he says, those are Greek flags. Oh, I didn't know. My bad. But that's what happens when people start devolving into stupid because they're scared. Coming up next, U.S. Senator Katie Britt. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Says, Grace, well, thank you very much about my monologue earlier. Says, Phil Williams for Trump speechwriter. You're blessed with the gift of expression of words eloquently and to the point, changing one mind at a time. Grace, thank you very much. I am honored by that. David from Bucky's says, Phil, Kamala Harris has yet to show the ability to lead, follow, or get out of the way. I know. You know what? She won't lead. She doesn't follow anybody, and she just won't get out of the way. So you're right, David. That's a great point. Brian from Decatur says Trump killed it on that. So we played that audio earlier of Trump delivering some zinger lines last night at the dinner in New York City. By the way, the Albert Smith Memorial Foundation dinner, the reason why it's called the Albert Smith dinner is because Albert Smith was the first Catholic to ever run for president. And so they named it, I think in the 1930s. And so they founded the dinner in 1946, immediately after World War II. And so, Albert Smith Memorial Foundation dinner in New York City. And Brian from Decatur says, Trump killed it, in my opinion. Mike from Coxie, Alabama says, Democrats are having a meltdown. Just the thought of losing the White House causes them to be upset. But adding insult to injury, losing to Donald Trump makes them scared. It does. You know what's crazy? Is they're going to prosper because of this. That's what's amazing, is they're scared to death of Trump getting in, but their economy is going to be better, their personal security is going to be better, their bank accounts are going to be better, their businesses are going to do better, and all of those liberal pundits who have their own talk shows or they work on networks, they're going to have plenty to talk about if they want to.
Can I admit something?
Yeah.
I am genuinely concerned and worried about the left's response if Trump wins, because if you remember back in during his whole first presidency, it was almost like they spent all of their attention on trying to get him out with all the impeachment attempts. And then the mainstream media, their sole focus was twisting, you know, the perception of Trump and trying to get people to turn against him. And I'm just worried that how far will they go to try to get him out if he wins again? You know, and people like to talk about, oh, if Trump loses, his MAGA Republicans, there's going to be a civil war. I'm worried about what the left's going to do in response to this, because they have no boundaries to how far they'll go to get him out or try to get him out. And I'm very concerned about that, honestly.
Are you concerned in terms of civil unrest, or are you concerned for his own personal security?
Not his own personal security. I'm just concerned for, I'll say it this way, the Democrats who are currently in office in the House or in the Senate and such, if they put their sole focus is on trying to get him out, you know, it's like they almost will, they'll go to their own detriment to try to get him out. And that on top of the mainstream media's attempts to try to, you know, throw dirt on him, I'm just concerned by if it will be worse than his first presidency.
Okay, so a couple thoughts on that. First of all, there's going to be a bit of a freak out when he gets elected. And then secondly, there's also going to be a huge amount of regret, because they're going to realize how much political capital they expended that they now have just lost on. The thing that's going to wind up preserving everything is if we can have the House and the Senate in Republican hands. And I don't say that like preserving it like to get all the things that we want, but also preserving it to help beat back some of those fights. Here's the other thing we got to watch. They're going to have a complete meltdown when they realize that there may be a couple of potential appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court that are going to happen during the next Trump tenure. And they're just freaking out right now in general. Civil unrest, maybe. But I think you're also seeing the black vote is switching over. So I think some of the air has gone out of the tires of things like Black Lives Matter and all that. And then on top of that, I think the world is a little more prepared at this point. So more to come. I share some of your concerns, but I think it's going to be okay. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming up next. We'll be with John Wall, chairman of the Republican Party. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I do mean this one. I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, I tell you, somebody else who covers a whole lot of ground is my friend John Wall, who is the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. Now, he's one of only 50 people in the nation that has his gig, being the chairman of the entire state's Republican Party. That's highly overworked and extremely underpaid, but it also makes him somebody who not only focuses on Alabama's politics, but he gets to be a part of the team, so to speak, in the big picture. And he's coming on the line right now to talk to us. John Wall, how are you doing?
I am good. It's good to be on the show.
Well, it's good to have you, and I appreciate you making some time on a Friday afternoon. I know you're traveling right now, so thanks for taking the time.
No, look, absolutely. You know, and this is one of those times for the next 2.5 weeks, and it's hard to believe we're at 2.5 weeks. But for that time period, it's going to be nonstop. You know, hit the ground running, keep people informed, make sure we're connecting all the dots, and that we don't let anything fall through the cracks, whether that's nationally, whether that's
Hey, and John, your signal's getting a little weak. I hope you can hear us okay. But the reality is, yes, 2.5 weeks. I mean, it feels like this campaign has been longer than usual. It feels like we have actually run multiple campaigns within one campaign. I think between all the lawfare against our candidate and then the switching out of the Democrat Party candidate, this one just seems like it has just had legs that just kept on churning.
No, absolutely. And look, we already won the president's race once.
Yeah.
And so the Democrats have us back for a second round. You know, we beat Joe Biden. Now we're back against Kamala Harris. And I think they're panicking again, because I think they see the trend headed in our direction. The American people are not being fooled. And they're seeing through some of this. And the trend is actually headed towards the Republican Party and towards Donald Trump.
You and I were talking just offline right before you came on the air. Real Clear Politics has a view of the battleground states that is the first time we've seen this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, what I love about, you know, using Real Clear Politics is they do a poll of polls. So it's not just a single person, not a conservative or a liberal pollster. They do a consensus of all different polls out there. And for the first time this cycle, Donald Trump is in the lead in every one of the seven swing states.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. But what they also don't take into account is if Donald Trump can continue his trend from both 2016 and 2020 of overperforming the polls, this could be a very early and a very good night for the Republican Party.
Let's bring it. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take to get some of the vote count from some of the I mean, Pennsylvania, please don't make us wait for days again. Go ahead.
Well, and like I said, the good thing is there's a chance that we don't even need Pennsylvania. What we're facing here is an incredible situation, and I don't want to get anyone overconfident.
Right.
Do not be overconfident.
Right.
Make sure you call your friends, your family in these swing states. You go vote here in Alabama. But I think what we're seeing is historic, because for 10 years now, the mainstream media have villainized Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. They've told people how horrible he is, that he's the equivalent of a Nazi. You know, the insults, the negativity. They've whipped people into such a fury that there's been two assassination attempts. And with all that negativity, with big tech, with censorship, Donald Trump is still on the cusp of becoming the next president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And I think that is a compliment. It's a highlight to the people of America who have seen through this rubbish and who have really said, no, you know what? We're going to think for ourselves, and we're not going to let a politically correct socialist mainstream media tell us how to think.
That's a great point. And I think there's also another piece of that sentiment is that there's a sort of an underlying sense that if they're allowed to get away with doing that to him, then what will they do to us? Because right now, I've said multiple times, I don't think there's anybody that could have withstood the onslaught better than he. He's uniquely suited between his own personal finances, his own resilience, his own network, and his own, you know, sort of semi-incumbency as the president to be able to withstand the onslaught. And he just keeps on going. And right now, I said it earlier, it looks like he's even having a good time doing it.
Look, I was down in Mar-a-Lago 2 days ago, and we're kind of going over some numbers, you know, getting ready for the final stretch, talked with the president. You're absolutely right. I do not know how he does it. I do not know where his energy comes from. I'm 38 years old, and I cannot keep up with him. He is very much enjoying it. There's a feeling around that things are going, not just things are going well, but that people are understanding, and that even the mainstream media is waking up to the fact that there's a clear separation between these two candidates, and there's a clear record. Look, they can lie all day long, but the bottom line is we all know where Kamala Harris stands on issues like the economy, on the border, on drilling, on national policy. And there's a clear differentiation between her and Donald Trump. And I think there's an excitement there because we see people that know the difference, and they're actually excited about bringing common sense policies back to the White House.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what's interesting, too, is I keep watching the Democrats, and they're going to have their base. I mean, the Democrat base is going to vote for her. I mean, if she went on TV and sacrificed babies on TV, they would still vote for her. There's a lot of those. But I also watch, and I think she's a lot of her demise is self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, well, and it's scary because, you know, that Democrat base is about 40 to 45% of the country. And it's very scary when you think about the fact that it wouldn't matter what the policies were. It would not matter where our country was financially or on a global scale. They would vote Democrat no matter what because they've been conditioned. And I would say brainwashed. I'm not going to hold back. I don't need to be politically correct here. I'm going to be honest about it. We have a socialist mentality in our education system that are turning people out, and the mainstream media reinforces this, that just want to condition people and brainwash them into believing that the government knows how to live our lives better than we do, and that the individuals shouldn't run this country, the global elite should. And I think that's the difference here. There are people who will just vote for the politically correct choice no matter what because they've been told that's the smart thing. That's what the educated thing to do is. And I think that's why our work does not get done. If Donald Trump gets elected November 5th, our work is not done. Our work has just started. Because what we have to do is we have to educate people and we have to explain why these values are so important. And we actually, as Republicans, our elected officials, have to actually fulfill the promises that we've made and have the backbone and get the job done.
No, totally. And if we don't, if we squander the opportunity, then shame on us.
That's right.
Hey, let me ask you before we run out of time. We got about 5 minutes left, but there's two things I wanted to cover down with you. One is there's been a lot of pandering from the Democrats right now. The Kamala Harris campaign really pandering for the black vote. I think they're very concerned about the losses that they're seeing in the polls among black voters. Your thoughts on that and what you're seeing or sensing nationwide. And then I want to talk about Georgia before we run out of time. Go ahead with the black vote first.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think you're absolutely right. The Democrat Party has they do best when they divide us as a people.
Yeah.
You know, that's all the Democrat Party is all about, division. They want to take us, divide us into groups of race to guide us, you know, gender, divide us by gender. You know, they always say women should vote Democrat. You know, white men are horrible. Well, why can't we just look at people as individuals? You know, every single person made in the image of Almighty God with the equal rights, constitutionally protected, and go back to that kind of the vision of our founding fathers of looking at every single person as what's best for you is then best for the entire country. And it's not what's best for your racial block or your sexual orientation. Forget all that. Just look at people as individuals again.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the Democrat Party is having trouble with right now. They have these coalitions where they split people into groups, but these groups are starting to have problems with each other because the Democrat Party has become so woke and so divisive with some of their policy positions recently. And a lot of the black community are centered around family. They're centered around the church, especially down here in the South. And I think that's really creating a thing where the black community are saying, you know what, we're not being represented by the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
They do not share our values. And they're looking for an alternative. And look, as chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, I want to say we want your vote. We're not asking for your vote. We want to have the chance to earn your vote. We want to help help the economy be better, where you can have jobs. We want to help you be free, and we want to help you get if there's welfare. We're not opposed to welfare, but what we want is we want you to be so successful you don't need to be on welfare.
Yeah.
And we want to help you live the American dream, and we want to earn the African American vote. And I certainly hope and pray that this trend continues.
Yeah, I do too.
Of the African American community coming around on that.
Well, that's so well said. Listen, no reason for me to add to that. Let me switch gears real quick before I run out of time. Georgia, right next door to us, to our east, is Georgia, which is unbelievably considered somewhat of a purple state. It's a battleground state. Early voting has already been ongoing now for a few days, and they're seeing record turnout. I know the Alabama Republicans are in Georgia helping door knock and do the things it takes to campaign. Tell us what you're seeing in Georgia. What does the early voting turnout mean, in your opinion?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And let me start quick before I get into that completely. If any of your listeners out there want to get involved in this effort over in Georgia, we want them. It's super easy to sign up. Just go to search on Google, Alabama Republican Party, ALGOP.org. First thing you'll see on there is a sign-up form. Help us over in Georgia. Poll watching is critical. This is one of the biggest targets in the entire country for the Trump campaign. Alabama voters can go to Georgia to poll watch. We want you to sign up there. Why that's important. Georgia is a key battleground state. We had Alabama volunteers knock 60,000 doors last week.
Wow. Wow.
And what we're doing is we're targeting disengagers. It's what you were talking about. People who don't normally vote, we're encouraging them to go vote early. Don't wait till Election Day. We're doing the same thing the Democrats have been doing in the past. We're banking the vote early. And why we're so happy about the early turnout is when you look 3 days ago, you can check every day in Georgia. 3 days ago, 300,000 Georgians voted.
Yeah.
2 days ago, 250,000 Georgians voted. The demographic split on that was a lot of rural areas, a lot of voters over the age of 65. And the demographic breakdown was 70% white, 30% black. If you look at those metrics, those are Republican metrics. And so we have the chance. We think that we're going to break even on early voting if this trend continues. And if we do that, then it's game over on Election Day.
Well, man, it can't get here fast enough, and I am hoping that there's a big doings that night. Are y'all going to have a statewide party, a watch party that night, or what?
We are looking into that right now. We'll probably have something in Birmingham. We're trying to find the location. And when we get that done, we'll let you know, because everyone is invited. We want to have a celebration here in Alabama. And then, of course, across the country, so many down ballot races that we're watching as well.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, taking back the Senate, holding the House.
Well, John Wall, calling us from the road, can't tell you how much we appreciate you. Thanks for your perspective. Thanks for what you're doing for the cause. And we'll talk again soon, man.
Hey, always good to be on the show.
All right, take care. That's Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. Just got back from Mar-a-Lago. It's kind of funny. The other day I texted him. I said, can you come on so-and-so date? And he goes, well, I'm going to be at Mar-a-Lago. And I went, oh. I guess I'll wait a day or two, because I want to hear about that. All right, tell you what, JP, move us to the break. We'll come back. I'll get some text messages. And then don't forget, coming up top of the hour, we'll put aside politics for a minute. Talk to JP on sports. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live from the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Friday afternoon. Listen, we're going to the phones right now. Alabama U.S. Senator Katie Britt is on the line with us. Senator Britt, how are you doing?
To you on this beautiful fall afternoon, and there are no shortage of topics we could cover today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a target-rich environment for me having a conservative talk show.
It really is.
Hey, let me ask you this, just to segue off of what I've been talking about right before you came on. I just did an entire segment I called Smell the Fear. I really feel like you can sense a change in the momentum, and that the Trump campaign seems to be having a good time. They seem relaxed and kind of laughing, and then the Democrats are having a complete, you know, come apart. I believe you can smell the fear on the Democrat side 18 days before the polls close. What do you think?
I could not agree with you more. Look, I'll rewind to a few weeks ago. I flew back to D.C. We were in Georgia for Faith and Freedom, J.D. Vance and I flew back with J.D. to D.C. And in that conversation, J.D. said, look, I mean, here's where our polling is. We're moving in the right direction. We're where we need to be. He could feel the momentum and growth. You could sense a calmness, about J.D. and we're right where we need to be, and we're going to make this happen. And I think I have seen that just continue, to your point, the entire campaign, from Trump to surrogates to others, you know, building off of that momentum, knowing that our message is finally resonating in a way that the American people are responding. It's like we finally, I guess the better way to put that is, we have finally broken through. The mainstream media has tried to deflect, not let President Trump and J.D. Vance tell their story and what they want to do for the American people. And fortunately for us, we've broken through. And the truth is, the more people see about Kamala, the more they see her out there, the more they see her answer questions. I mean, goodness gracious, with that Brett Baer interview,
yeah,
the more they realize there is no way, not only is she not right on the issue, but she is incapable of leading this nation forward. And so you're right. It feels good. And I know we can't take anything for granted. We certainly have to be vigilant in every state, in every way, make sure that every vote is counted, that we continue to encourage people by knocking doors, making phone calls, talking to our friends, not just here at home, but across the country, making sure they know what's at stake. But even in the Senate races, Phil, we are right where we need to be to hopefully have a really good night on November 5th.
No, I agree, because I think the presidency is key. We've got to have it, but we got to also have the House and the Senate. And I look forward to seeing a complete sea change in D.C. And then it's going to be necessary, I think, because there's so much to have to unwind at this point. But Senator, somebody who, and I think I mentioned it before last time you were on the air, somebody who I know that you're personal friends with, and I've gotten to where I actually really appreciate him, is Democrat Senator John Fetterman. And he recently said,
absolutely,
he's warning people right now. He's a Democrat. He's an avowed Democrat. He gets it. He's a true believer, but he also speaks truth. And he said recently that Democrats better wake up, because Trump's chances of winning his home state of Pennsylvania are pretty strong. He said, quote, he has a special kind of place in that state.
You know, and look, obviously it is well documented that John and I have, you know, many political beliefs that are different, but John and I are good friends, and Wesley and I are proud to call he and Giselle friends. We've gotten to know them, and to your point, that's exactly right. He speaks truth, and he understands Pennsylvania when it comes to, you know, from being lieutenant governor to now serving in this space. You know, to have someone of his stature and willingness to put it out there, say that, that lets you know that the momentum on the ground there in Pennsylvania, you know, a state that up until a couple of weeks ago, Democrats were sure they were going to hold. I mean, to the point where she didn't even pick Shapiro because she thought she had that one, you know, locked up. I think that's shifting. And even now, that Senate race, Bob Casey, longtime incumbent, and Dave McCormick is in a different spot. It is literally neck and neck. And let me tell you how else you know this. You see Bob Casey now running campaign ads, Phil, running campaign ads with Donald Trump and them. And he is not the only Democratic incumbent who's doing that. Tammy Baldwin is also doing that in Wisconsin. And then you see Sherrod Brown, who is anything but a moderate, running as a moderate and sending out mailers talking about how he worked with Donald Trump. And that shows you right there, people want the common sense practicality of Donald Trump back in the White House. They want a leader who wants to put America, American opportunity, American citizens, American businesses in the very best place possible to succeed, unlike what we're seeing out of Biden-Harris, where they let the border be wide open, where they don't stand up for even American companies. We've seen this with Vulcan in Mexico, allowing Mexico to seize their property. Yes. It's really unimaginable. And then what were the chaos we're seeing across the globe, putting Americans at risk? It's just people are ready for a change. And to your point, you can feel it. And it's got to be a big night, not just for the president, but we want it to be for the House and the Senate as well.
Well, and there's plenty of news out there. And one of the things that's it's a news story, in my opinion, it's kind of an aggregate here, but is that the Democrats continue to factionalize the nation. They divide everybody up into little sectors, little pots. And they have they're determined to go after the black vote, and they do so with pandering. And they're determined to ignore the Catholic vote by skipping the dinner last night in New York City. And then they're scared to death of supporting Jews too strongly because it might alienate the Arab Palestinian faction vote. And I think what they're doing, though, is they're angering everybody because they can't please anybody.
Bingo. And it also shows you that their moral compass is broken. I mean, they're not standing firm on anything but the fact that they are going to tell everybody what they want to hear and or retreat and be weak. And look, it's that weakness that we've seen from the White House, you know, treating Iran with, like, if you appease them, if you try to be friends with them, they're going to all of a sudden, you know, share our values and be nice. No, that's not how it works. And when you see her even talk to Bret Baier and try to blame Trump for Iran, when they are the ones that refuse to actually enforce sanctions, they are the ones that have chosen this path of don't, which obviously, as you and I have talked before, our adversaries just hear do every time they say that. I think you're right. And I think at the end of the day, too, they don't have Americans' best interest at heart in what they're doing at the border and what they're doing abroad. And if they do, it's sure a funny way of showing it. And I think Americans can feel it. I really do, Phil. I mean, are you hearing that from your listeners and people that you in the community with, church, all the things? I mean, are they seeing that too?
Absolutely. I mean, I know for a fact that to some degree I run in a bubble. So within the bubble, I certainly am hearing that there's a sense that they don't have America's best interest at heart. But I think that the broader public is feeling that. And I think that what's happening is the undecided voters are finally becoming decided. The vote is gelling. And I think that's very, very, very telling. And let me ask you this. You mentioned and abroad. Speaking of abroad, I want to ask you, since you're in the D.C. environment right now, the response to the fact that Israel continues to decapitate the worst of the worst in the Middle East. And yesterday they finally caught Yahya Sinwar, the leader of the Hamas faction. And
amazing.
It really was amazing. I mean,
amazing.
Israel has become like extremely adept. If you're out there, they will find you. But what's the mood like in D.C.?
Isn't that the way you want to be known?
Yeah.
Isn't that the way you want to be known?
Darn right.
It's like if you come through me, you can go. go hide, but guess what? I will find you. And that is what Israel has said. And look, I mean, you think back to October 7th, and obviously just the devastation and the barbaric terrorist attack, and there were so many. Even in this ground invasion, think about Sinwar. So you have Kamala Harris saying, I've studied the map, and a ground invasion will not work in Rafah.
Yes.
Well, aren't we glad they didn't listen to Kamala Harris? Aren't they glad that they went in? And because otherwise he would still be out there plotting, killing more innocent Jewish people and America. Because think about this. Remember, death to America, death to Israel. That's what we've got to take a step back and just applaud Israel for making sure that barbaric terrorists are no longer on the face of this globe. Look, and I think when you see what they've done and what they've been able to accomplish, I mean, whether it's, gosh, I mean, think about the beepers. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know,
huge.
You've been in this world. The amount of time and intentionality and connectivity and then quiet. I mean, that never leaked. And you know how long they had to be working on it. And to send that message of, we know who you are, we know where you are, and we know how to get to you immediately in a way that creates confusion, destruction. I mean, it was amazing. And then you pull out walkie-talkies when your beepers, and then we'd go there. And then you come out from hiding underneath these tunnels, and we'll find you there. So I think this is a real moment. This could be a moment for peace. If the people of Gaza will release, if those that are still with Hamas and those that are not will release these innocent hostages, these people that the American citizens, Israeli citizens, all across the board, release them and let there be a time, you know, put your weapons down and let's forge a path forward. And, you know, I'm hopeful in those regards, but obviously not naive. And we've got to have leadership that's willing to say, hey, we're going to enforce these sanctions against Iran. I mean, if you look back under Trump administration, even the New York Times said both Hezbollah and Hamas were literally bankrupt. Yeah. And that's because we used every tool in our toolbox. And I'm not talking about the lethal ones. We used the non-lethal tools in our toolbox to make them feel the pain, and they did. And we've got to go back to doing those things, and we certainly have to stand with our greatest ally in the Middle East, and that is that's most definitely Israel.
I think one of my favorite quotes in recent days has been one of your colleagues, Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, said the only people left in Hezbollah were the ones who weren't important enough to have a beeper or a walkie-talkie.
That is so Tom Cotton. I always call Tom, you know, when Tom is on the Intelligence Committee, he obviously has served honorably in our armed forces. He's a member of the Armed Services Committee. And so I will call him frequently, you know, just saying, hey, look, here's what I'm seeing. This is what I've read. Here's what I'm gathering. Like, or you know, what else? And those are some of the best conversations because Tom is just directly to the point. And obviously stands firmly with our men and women in uniform, but also understands how to truly achieve peace through strength. And so I always enjoy hearing how Tom is going to react to one of these things.
Well, Senator, I hate it, but we're out of time. But I really appreciate you making some time on a Friday afternoon. And in the meantime, stay in touch. And 18 days, let's see this thing all the way through to a new day, I hope.
Hey, absolutely. And hey, and thank you for bringing up Israel. I mean, they not only have a right, they have a duty to defend themselves and their people. And so thank you for bringing up that as well. And let's get this done. 18 days. Let's
All right. It. Senator Katie Britt, thanks so much. Right. Have a great weekend. That's take us to the break there, JP, but that's just cool. And I really appreciate the fact that her staff reached out and said, you got time for her to call in because she may have some commentary. And yes, she did. All right, listen, we're going to come back, take some text messages, and then bottom of the hour, we're going to keep going with Chairman John Wall of the Alabama Republican Party. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. David from Hoax Bluff checks in and just sends me a picture and says, sweet taters. I mean, so apparently he's been out in the garden. Good on you, David. Dorothy from Elkmont says, who will certify the election? There's a conflict of interest with Kamala on the ticket. Won't this disqualify her? That's a great question. But, you know, Mike Pence would have been allowed to certify the, or did certify the last one, and he was on the ticket as a vice president. So I think the bottom line is she has a constitutional duty. She'll have to do it. And if not, then they'll declare a proxy necessary. The pro tem of the Senate can actually do it in her absence. But if they need her there for her vote, she'll have to be there. Jim from Grove Oak says Shelby County, Tennessee had trouble with their voting machines this week. Ah, did not know that. Jim from Grove Oak, if you know that there's a, if there's anything messy afoot, let us know. If it's just trouble with the machines and they got it worked out, then okay. Brian from Decatur says, in your opinion, how does a true Jesus-loving Christian or a devout Muslim vote for the Democrat Party? I would add Jews to that too, by the way. Everything they stand for seems to go completely against the basis of both religions, taking the Israeli conflict out of it. You left off. Listen, I think the bottom line is, I'm an evangelical Christian myself. I believe that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He's my personal Savior. I believe that no one comes to the Father except by Him, and I believe that with all my heart. I am aware that other people have different kinds of faith, but what I'm looking at right now is if you study the tenets of the Christian faith, of the Jewish faith, and even of the Muslim faith, you will find that the Democrat Party contradicts them on a regular basis. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans are perfect. I'm not. But if you look at the tenets of those faiths, by and large, you will find that the things that those faiths say they stand for at their core are not generally supported right now by the Democrat Party. It's a little wild to watch, but so I don't know what to tell you, man. John from Huntsville says, JP, when is your on sports segment with JP going to be on? Because I got a couple of Friday night college football picks for you to make, John. Coming up at the top of the hour.
Yep, and I'm ready for them.
All right.
I feel like my Friday predictions have been pretty good, but my Saturday predictions have not been too great the last couple of weeks.
Well, I was proud to be one of your guest pickers, and I can't brag about my picks. So, but that was also upset weekend.
He did better than me still.
That's true. Okay, there's that. Roy from Hartzell says, Phil, I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when Kamala heard Trump's words at that dinner in New York. Listen, you know what? I think that would have – she's been very angry on the stump here the last 24 hours. I mean, there's multiple videos of her just like going complete ballistic at the stump, waving her hands in the air and yelling like she's mad. I think she genuinely is mad, to be honest. I think she's tense, she's mad, and she's scared. Lewis from Birmingham. By the way, let me step back. Kamala. There was going to be something for her. She'll get a gig on The View or something when she loses. But I think right now she is upset and scared, not for because she really, really, really wants to be the president. I think she's upset and scared because she doesn't know what to do with herself if she's not the president.
Yeah, where does she go if she loses? Honestly, like...
She's not a senator, not an AG, not a vice president.
I mean, the Democratic Party kind of ousts its own people for embarrassing losses. This will be an embarrassing loss if Kamala loses. So
it will be.
Her political career could very well be over if she loses it.
Well, it better be over.
Yeah.
She was at the pinnacle, and she, you know, Trump is one of the few people in U.S. history who has been able to be beaten and then come back and run for the office again at that level.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's done. She's toast. But I think she'll probably get a book deal. She'll get some. Who knows? Maybe she'll go home and run for governor in California. But you know, Gavin's got his thing where he's going to do something in a few years. He's probably going to be the next candidate. Jenny from Decatur says, "Sweet home." What are we doing? Sweet home about what? Okay, sweet home. I great. Trey from Madison says, "Imagine the devil sitting in hell watching the big archway marked new arrivals, and he's singing, sitting here." Waiting on my yaya. Oh, I gotcha. Okay. Now I see. David from Florence is brand spanking new in the text lines. We're glad you're there, David. He says, David from Florence, UNA grad, listen to the show regularly. He says, William Koenig has a book called Eye to Eye on the Consequences of Dividing Israel. Alex Newman's book on indoctrinating our children to death is very good on public schools. And Amir Safarti is a retired major in the Israeli military and a Christian, has a good Telegram channel.
I follow Amir's Telegram channel. He's
really?
He's one of the best ones in terms of reporting from the actual area.
I'm new to that. I need to clue in. David Florence, glad you're in the text lines. More to come coming up after the top of the hour. JP on Sports. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on a Friday. Look, we're going to break in from politics for a little bit. We got to spend a few minutes just talking through what's going to happen with sports in the days to come, which means we got to do a round of JP on Sports. Hit me some applause. JP on Sports. You like my ad hoc?
I almost don't want to make a sound effect. That one's good enough.
I think we need to do something for you, though, man. You deserve it. So this is like 4 weeks in a row now we've had JP on Sports. There are people out there right now who will not call their bookies until you have spoken.
Well, if you're going off my Saturday picks, then don't trust me the last couple of weeks. It's been rough.
All right, so here's the deal. Those who don't know, JP on Sports, we break it up into two segments. The first round is called the Three and Out. He gives us his top three stories to watch in the sporting world. And then we come back from a break and we do the two-minute warnings. He's got 2 minutes per topic to get as many as he can in. Mm-hmm. JP, three and out, go.
Well, the game of the week is from the SEC this week of Georgia at Texas this week. Number one Texas versus number five Georgia. Before the season started, we talked about how Texas only had two hard games, and it was Michigan and Georgia. They've gotten through Michigan, stomped them, and a lot of people think they may handle Georgia pretty easily as well, which if that's the case, I would bet there's going to be an undefeated Texas because they got through Oklahoma, they got through Michigan, and if they get through Georgia, there's nobody else really. So if Texas wins this game, you could look at potentially an SEC champion Texas, which I think will happen.
Neither one's coming off a bye week, are they?
Mm-mm. No, Georgia just played Mississippi State,
yeah, that's right.
I thought they would kill them. They only won by 10, so they made it a bit more of a game than it should have been, and Texas steamrolled Oklahoma. They did a lot better than I expected against Oklahoma's defense. So Texas is coming off a hot win against their rival, and now they have the last of their hard games, really, against Georgia. So
okay, so Georgia is still, I don't want to sound like I'm making a pun, but still smarting over their loss to Alabama.
Yeah.
Licking their wounds a little bit, trying to regain lost ground. They're number five in the nation where they were number one.
Alabama beat them.
All right, so are they changing up the gameplay any? Are they coming in with a new strategy? Anything going to change as they take the field with Tech? And where is it playing, by the way?
It's in Austin. It's at Texas. Wow. So okay. It's not an easy game for Georgia. They haven't really changed it up much because even in the second half against Alabama, I mean, they took the lead with 2 minutes left and made that valiant comeback. So, they figured out Alabama's defense. So although they lost, you kind of have to come away from that loss like, okay, I mean, we played as bad of the first half as we could have played against Alabama and then had the lead in with 2 minutes left. So although they took an L on that one, they've gained back some momentum. They beat Auburn. They beat Mississippi State. They had a bye week in there too, I believe. And so now, they have a little bit of momentum playing Texas, but Texas also has momentum of they're the best team in the country. They just beat their rival 34-3, I believe it was. So it's gonna be a mighty crash of top SEC teams. But even if Georgia loses this game, truthfully, they still could be okay because their two losses are against a number four Alabama, I believe, when they play them, and then number one Texas. So,
all right. So clash of the Titans. Let's don't be shy. What's your prediction?
I think Texas will win. I wouldn't be surprised if it's pretty handedly, honestly. Texas is, by and far, Texas is the best team in the country right now.
All right, there's one. What's two?
Well, it's the third Saturday in October. That means it's Alabama versus Tennessee up in Knoxville.
Oh,
it's,
that's right.
It's the first time Bama's played up there since they lost in 2022, ending their 15-year winning streak over Tennessee. But Alabama's about to hit this stretch where if they want to make the playoffs, they have to – They really have to win every game during this stretch. I mean, you could make an argument that if they lose one, they're still okay, but the fact that their first loss came to Vanderbilt doesn't help them. So they really need to win out this stretch. They got Tennessee, Missouri, and then they got to go to LSU. So this is a rough stretch for them. But Tennessee lost to Arkansas 2 weeks ago and then barely beat Florida in overtime, which, if you ask me, is almost worse than not being almost losing to South Carolina. Florida's really, really bad, and that was in Knoxville. So Tennessee, they've been playing really slow. You know, they started off, they had a hot start, and people were talking about them being one of the best four teams in the country, and then they lost to Arkansas, had that rough game against Florida last week. They haven't been very impressive. So both Alabama and Tennessee have had not very impressive performances the last 2 weeks. So this kind of game, I don't really know what to expect in this game, to be honest.
Okay, you're going to make a prediction? I mean, you're a Bama fan, I know, but what are you going to do?
I think Alabama will find a way to win this game. And because Tennessee has just – they've looked very beatable the last couple of games. Obviously, it's in Knoxville, so it's that's always a factor. Knoxville's a horribly hard place to play. But, you know, I think Alabama – I think this is almost a better matchup for them, honestly, playing against Tennessee. You know, they have a really fast-paced offense, which with the spread defense that Alabama has almost fits it better. You saw how they played against Georgia in the first half. Now we talk about the second half, but they had a good performance in the first half. I think it's not that bad of a matchup, but I think it being in Knoxville will be worrisome for Alabama fans, and rightfully so. It's a hard place to play.
Bama fans won't outnumber the Volunteer fans this time in the stadium. Not like Vandy, where they had 60% of the seats.
No. And still ended up losing that game.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's two. What's three?
Auburn is playing Missouri this week. Whoop, Missouri, whoop. Number 21. And this, I say must win. Every game from here on out for Auburn is really a must win. Although this is against a ranked Missouri team, number 21, this is a very gettable game for Auburn because Missouri has not looked very good. They almost lost to Vanderbilt, and they already have a loss on their record. I was not very high on Missouri coming into the season, and they've really been disappointing. They have not looked very good. This game is at Missouri, though, so Auburn's got to go on the road. But Auburn's coming off a bye week. Any injuries they might have had, hopefully those have healed up, and they've had an extra week to game plan for Missouri. So, you know, this Auburn team, if they come up and go into Missouri and get a win, they could get some momentum going maybe and, you know, get on a little roll. But, yeah, this is a big must-win game for Hugh Freeze, with it being a ranked opponent too. But, like I said, a very gettable ranked opponent. So
It is. And is it going to be Peyton Thorne again at the helm?
Yeah, I think they're going with Peyton Thorne from here on out. You know, I think they were hoping their backup, Hank Smith, I believe it was Hank Smith was his name, didn't. Obviously, he threw 3.5 interceptions against Arkansas. So yeah. I think Peyton Thorne is their guy for now. But they have a commit, a five-star who flipped from Notre Dame, a commit, a quarterback coming in the next class. It's almost like, from the Auburn fans I've seen, are looking to him to be the savior next year for Auburn.
Is he a commit or a portal?
He's a commit. He's coming out of high school. He's been committed to Notre Dame for quite some time, and Hugh Freeze was able to flip him. So, although the quarterback play is bad right now for Auburn, help is on the way of Deuce Knight, who we come in next year. So
Deuce Knight.
It's a great name, too.
So we got a quarterback coming in named Deuce Knight.
Deuce Knight.
Is that his real name, Deuce?
I think so. That's all I've seen. I don't know if that's a nickname or not. But
that was a cocky mom and dad that said, what do you want to name it? Let's call him Deuce. I like it.
But for now, look, if Peyton Thorne can game manage, he didn't play that bad against Georgia. Georgia, I think, all around is just a much better team.
Yeah.
And Georgia didn't steamroll them like people thought they would. So, I'm kind of wanting to pick Auburn in this game a little bit because this is a game.
Come on.
This is a game that Hugh Freeze would win, you know, having the bye week to rest up. Missouri is not that good, truth be told. But if they were able to go up to Missouri and get a win, that's a big win for Auburn this year.
So are you gonna put your neck out there? What are you gonna say? What are you gonna say? What are you
gonna say? I'm leaning towards Auburn right now. I'm gonna go for Auburn in this game.
Oh, nice.
I may look stupid on that, and if Auburn doesn't win this game, I'm probably not gonna pick Auburn the rest of the year. But this is just the type of game that Auburn wins, you know, off a bye week and a must win to get momentum going against a ranked team. I think Auburn could do it. If they lose, it'll be a close loss, I think.
All right, that is round one, three and out with JP on Sports. We're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back, and then we go into round two of JP on Sports where we do it. We call it the two-minute warning. I've got a timer. He's got 2 minutes to get the words out on whatever topics he's got in the sports world. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're in round two of JP on Sports. So this is a section we call the two-minute warning. So first of all, I will say this. JP is like an encyclopedia of sports facts and trivia. And so this next section we do, he just runs the gamut, does whatever he wants to do, but it's 2 minutes per topic. I've got a timer. First topic, JP, go.
Well, it is a playoff baseball still going on, and we are in the conference championships for both leagues. We got the Yankees and the Guardians, formerly the Indians, but Yankees and the Guardians, and then you have the Dodgers and the Mets. And I've been really high on the Mets potentially going on to win the whole thing.
Yeah, you said that last week, I think.
Man, the Dodgers are looking really, really good right now. They got a 3-1 lead. They won last night's game handily. They got the best player in baseball now. Some people are saying the best player ever in Shohei Ohtani. Oh, yeah. And he's playing in his first playoffs. He's been in the league for like 4 or 5 years for the Angels, and he's just now playing in his first playoffs with the Dodgers, and he is carrying them through to potentially a World Series. It looks like they're going to beat the Mets pretty handily. And then on the other side, though, the Yankees have a 2-1 lead, but last night the Guardians walked them off in the 10th inning. So they got another game today in Cleveland. If the Guardians can make it 2-2, then we're going to have a tight series. But I think I speak for all baseball fans of I don't want to see a Yankees-Dodgers World Series.
No?
I don't think people want to see that. It's, you know,
Yankees-Dodgers fans do.
Yeah, I guess. But I foresee the ESPNs and everybody just shoving it down our throats of, you know, the Yankees and the Dodgers, the two, you know, most famous teams in the World Series. Just, I think people want to see, you know, a Mets or a Guardian slip in there. But it looks like the Dodgers will be making the World Series. I think the Yankees still have a tight series on their hands somewhat. But Shohei Ohtani is, like I said, potentially, if he's not already, going to be the greatest baseball player ever. So it is fun to see him on a team that actually can compete in the playoffs and not the Angels, which they don't even make the playoffs. So there is that aspect. It's fun to see him playing at this time of the year, but I just really hope it's not Yankees-Dodgers.
And you got in with 6 seconds to spare. Well, all right. So, all right, no buzzer on that one. All right, next 2 minutes. By the way, I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that Dodgers legend Steve Garvey is running for Congress right now, and he may beat Adam Schiff out in California.
That would be
a hoot.
That would be crazy.
So maybe the Dodgers having their momentum will give him some political momentum. Who knows?
I'm good with that.
All right, next one. 2 minutes, go.
Well, I got to talk about this because I find this story fascinating. It's from the world of college football. So Oregon and Ohio State last week had a game come down to the very end. It was number 2 versus number 3. It came down to the last drive of the game. There was a moment in that game. I didn't catch it when it happened, but they brought it up after the game. So there was a moment where Ohio State was driving, last drive of the game. They needed a touchdown to win, or maybe it was a field goal. It was either a touchdown or a field goal to win. And there was about 12 seconds left, enough time for about 2 more plays. Oregon's coach Dan Lanning purposefully gets a 12-player-on-the-field penalty and costs him 5 yards, but he caught a loophole because if there's a penalty for 12 men on the field, you don't reset the clock. So he sacrificed 5 yards for about 6 or 7 seconds of the clock to go off. So instead of 2 plays, Ohio State now has one play, you know, able to, they only have time for 1 play.
Wow.
So he sacrificed 5 yards for 6 or 7 seconds. Instead of 2 plays, they only got 1 play
that
left.
That is shifty.
And Ohio State ended up losing. But the NCAA changed the rule because of that now.
So they changed it since last week?
Yes. So now teams have the opportunity to reset the game clock if that penalty is called. But I always love those things of they have to change the rule for you because you're able to find such a clever loophole that they have to change the rule for you.
Yeah.
How much research and preparing does Dan Lanning have to do? And in the moment, have the sense of, all right, you only have like 20 seconds to make that call. So we're going to purposely get a penalty to take 6 or 7 seconds off the clock and make them only have 1 play left. It's genius.
That is game management right there. That is somebody who knows the details of his profession. That is amazing.
But now that rule's changed. They might as well call it the Lanning rule now.
Time's up, 2 minutes. All right. Oh, that was very cool. The Lanning rule. They should.
Yeah, they should.
All right. Next, what we got time? Yeah, we do. 2 minutes. Go.
So basketball season is almost here. Woo! And tonight we have an exhibition game of Alabama is playing in Birmingham. Excuse me, the name of the auditorium they're playing in is slipping my mind. Let me pull that up real quick. They are playing in the Boutwell Auditorium.
The Boutwell, exactly.
Boutwell Auditorium. I think they're going to start doing the Bama and Boutwell every year. This is the first edition of it. Exhibition game against Wake Forest. But if, you know, if there's any Bama fans out there who are solely football fans and haven't been paying attention to Alabama basketball, they may have last year. Obviously, Alabama made the Final Four. But Alabama is right now preseason number 2 in the AP poll, the highest ranking Alabama has ever had in preseason. So this Bama team is going to be very, very good. They're even better than the Final Four team last year. But for the Auburn fans out there, Auburn is number 11 in the ranking, so they're not too far behind. So right now we're looking at probably the best SEC basketball teams in the state of Alabama. And we have Mark Sears and Janai Broome were both on the preseason SEC team. And Mark Sears was the preseason SEC player of the year, as in, you know, they're kind of predicting him to win preseason or when predicting him to win SEC player of the year. So we got two very solid teams in the state of Alabama with Alabama and Auburn. This Alabama team, roster-wise, a lot of people have them as the best roster in the country because they're returning Mark Sears, returning Grant Nelson, returning Jareen Stevenson, returning Latrell Reitzel. All these good players from the Final Four team are back, and then they added guys like Aiden Hallway, who transferred from Auburn, by the way. It's a very interesting storyline there. And you got Youngblood transferring from South Florida, who's actually from Tuscaloosa. So key assets. And then you have Clifford, Big Cliff is what they call him, center, who is going to anchor down the defense. The Alabama team, the roster, I'm going to be honest, looks absolutely complete. So we'll have to take a look at that this season.
Time's up. 2 minutes. And by the way, Bruce Pearl is actually one of my favorite sports personalities right now. Coach Pearl from Auburn is just a hoot.
He's one of the bravest guys in college sports.
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
Do we have time for one more 2 minute? What do we have?
We got 1 minute left. I can get a quick one in.
Yeah. So what you got?
So I want to talk about this Heisman race a little bit in college football because it's coming down between Travis Hunter and Ashton Ginty for Boise State, it appears right now.
Boise State?
Mm-hmm. Ashton Ginty is having one of the best seasons for running back in history. I don't have it up right now, but I believe he's already over 1,000 yards on the year, and we're 8 games in.
Wow.
He's very impressive. But you have Travis Hunter, who is – plays both sides of the ball. He plays both offense and defense, which nobody does in college. He's maybe getting like 3 or 4 plays off a game, and he's if he goes into the draft, which he likely will, he'll be one of the top corners, but he also could be one of the top receivers. So very interesting Heisman race coming
JP
right
on
now.
Sports nailed it. All right, we're going to come back. I got plenty of text messages, and we're going to talk about some lab-grown meat. Oh, my gosh. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, we're going to jump in some text messages. I'm going to leave you guys with a topic that is not political, but it's very, very important. It's like, it's right up there with, cow flatulence and, you know, climate change, just it's a whole thing. Lab-grown meat. All right, when I say that, what do you picture? All right, so I've got a stack of resources. Some of y'all may have heard me opine about this before. Lab-grown meat. This is wrong. This is like against the laws of nature. JP, I'm going to read you something. Just the opening paragraph from a recent article in Nature magazine. You ready?
Yep.
Headline, this lab-grown meat probably tastes like beef.
Probably.
You put the word probably. They put the word probably in the title.
Man, that restores faith.
Yeah, it does. Byline, just under the headline, the byline, cultured meat that tastes and smells more appetizing could enhance public perception of artificial steaks. You think? So if they make it taste and smell more appetizing, maybe people will like it. Now, I think what we really want is the flappy piece of flesh laying in the petri dish that they grew with some cells that perpetuate. Just say it. Here's the paragraph. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Opening paragraph of the article. Meat grown in the lab has been hailed as an environmentally friendly, cruelty-free alternative to conventional chops and steaks, but struggles to replicate the taste of the real thing. Now researchers have engineered cultured meat that releases beefy flavors at high temperatures, a development that could improve its appeal to diners. So not only are they now faking the texture, they are also faking the smell and the taste. Because it's fake! So just saying, lab-grown, and I don't know, what do you picture when I say lab-grown meat? What I mean?
A little petri dish with something like mutilate, like slowly growing, you know.
Have you ever seen jellyfish wash up on the beach?
Yeah, something
that's
like that.
That's what I'm, just put maybe a tad more color into it, and it just lays there flappy and gross. All right.
Not very appetizing.
Just by the way, the lab-grown meat industry is tanking.
I wonder
just
why.
So you know, headlined 2 days ago from the National Pulse, the lab-grown meat industry demands public subsidies because no one's buying it. So when you can't settle anything in the public sector, quickly turn to government and say, but climate change, can you please help us? All right, so the laboratory-grown meat industry, it says in the National Pulse, faces significant challenges securing the necessary funding to sustain itself. That's called the private sector, by the way. That's called the free market. You build the better mousetrap, people will flock to it. If it sucks, they won't buy it. Various sectors within the agri-food tech are seeing steep decline in their investments since early 2022. According to preliminary data, funding in the laboratory meat sector, apparently there's a meat sector, lab meat sector in the market. The laboratory meat sector peaked at $989 million in the year 2021. That decreased to $807 million in 2022. And then it dropped a 78% whopping drop to just $177 million was invested in the year 2023. In other words, people went, this is neat. This is, we're out of here.
This is cool. Oh, this is gross.
This is gross. All right, I'm going to read you something that really got me. First of all, they are moving to what's known as cultivated meat. They're trying to get away from the idea of calling it lab-grown meat. So they're calling it cultivated meat. That's their new tricky word to make you think it's not near as gross as it really is. But listen to this. This is from the National Pulse. It's not like it's a overly conservative try to track. It's a straightforward article just talking about investments and all that. At the end of the article, though, it says this. Lab meat also comes with a range of potential health issues, being in a product of immortalized cell lines that replicate in perpetuity like cancer. What?
Just a little concern.
So basically, they've got this stuff that is like almost like, you know, the perpetual motion machine. It just keeps growing in the petri dish. That's how it grows. They feed it. It grows. It's a little beast. You're eating something that was growing, which apparently they're saying there's some concerns that maybe it just keeps on growing. So you're taking something into your system which has the ability to replicate in perpetuity like cancer. I'm just saying, back away, like now. States are already banning this stuff. Florida banned it. Florida banned it, and the lab-grown meat company immediately sued to have the Florida ban enjoined. They judge, give us a chance. Just don't let them shut us down in Florida. And the judge, as of 2 days ago, said, no, you're not gonna be able to stop the ban. The ban continues. You can keep the lawsuit going, but the ban is still in place. You cannot enjoin the law. And so the legislation, which started earlier this year, stays in effect. What that basically means, as a lawyer, I'll just tell you that when you get something enjoined in court, you have to be able to show that you have the likelihood of prevailing on the merits of the case. In other words, your point is well taken by the judge. In other words, the judge did not think their point was well taken. They're out of there. Here's the piece that I wind up this mini segment with, this mini dipper. Story that I pulled off of a defense industry news site. Dateline, 2 months ago. lab meat for soldiers. Up to $500 million taxpayer dollars earmarked by the Department of Defense for cell-cultured meat research and development. We now have $500 million of our defense budget being spent in grant funding for the development of lab-grown meat products by a manufacturing company called BioMade. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is not taking it well. So Representative Don Bacon, who's a Republican from Nebraska, substituted an amendment to the Rules Committee, yada, 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 and the amendment would have prohibited the use of DOD funds. Well, the amendment did not pass, and so now we have DOD funds earmarked to research whether we should feed fake lab-grown meat to soldiers. I'm just saying, if that's not a clear indication of what the Biden-Harris administration has been like, I don't know what else is.
I'm sure that will help recruitment. We're going to feed you lab-grown meat.
Yeah. Come join the military where we'll teach you how to help us to be more diverse and celebrate your ability to get taxpayer-funded transgender operations. And oh, by the way, feed you meat from a Petri dish that perpetuates its cells just like cancer. It's awesome. In the Army, be all you can be. All right. There's my mini rant against lab-grown meat, and I really feel like when I picture lab-grown meat, all I can picture is something that washed up on the beach, and it lays there looking flappy and pasty and gross and kind of slimy, and apparently they say it also comes from, what do they call it, cells that perpetuate in perpetuity.
In other words, cancer.
Just like cancer. Yeah. But oh my God!
What is the? Are they trying to stop people from eating cows because of the cow farts that are causing climate change? Well, if the people aren't eating cows, then there's going to be more cows.
Well, cow
right?
flatulence is ruining the world.
You know what's funny is in middle school. I won't say what middle school I went to, but it was a very liberal middle school, and that was part of our curriculum where we watched a documentary about cow farts.
No, you did not.
And how it's
your teacher made you sit through a cow fart documentary.
And the name is blanking on me because it was a hilarious name. But yeah, the film was solely dedicated to how cow farts are causing climate change.
It's a wonder you turned out as good as you did.
Yeah.
Brian from Huntsville texts in. He says, lab-grown meat failing? Their DNA came from President Biden and Kamala Harris. It's too raunchy and tastes like a chicken. Can't show up for dinner. Oh, my gosh. Lisa from Huntsville says, and this is how the zombie apocalypse begins.
Yeah.
Yes. David from Bucky says, Phil, fake meat and EVs, same story, different names. Both fail with consumers. So they ask for tax dollars that we give the government. Maybe if they would build a better mousetrap. Yes, ideally that would be the free market, and it doesn't work that way. Dustin from Hillsboro, can you order the faux meat with extra flavor like you can order it well done? I don't know. I mean, is it kind of like the McRib sandwich that comes looking like it really is like been pressed into a shape? I don't know. JT Lacey Springs, lab-grown meat is like the white in chicken poop. It's still chicken poop. I don't know how to take that, JT. I'm just going to let that ride. Glenn from Bluntsville says, I would eat an armadillo before I would eat lab-grown meat. Possum on the half shell. And then Brian from Huntsville again says, lab-grown meat designed for Haitian refugees in Michigan. Wow. Wow. I'm not wow, Brian. Brian from Decatur says, just step back and realize that liberal Democrats care more about cows and animals than they do human babies. Yes. Yes, it is true. And then we get a picture from Jeff from Indiana as a timeline cleanser of the big inflatable slide for the kids. He's got a party going on, apparently.
And he also asked what a lab-grown pickled egg would taste like.
Lab-grown pickled egg? Tastes like chicken. All right, take us to a break, JP. Last break of the day, getting you guys all the way to go home time. Go ahead and find your keys, get your lunchbox, pack up the briefcase. It's time to go home for the weekend. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower, lab-grown meat. So John from Brownsboro just texted in. He says, in order for it to be self-perpetuating, it has to use energy and then give off waste. What is a lab meat fart doing to the environment? I need to see some studies.
That brings up a valid point.
A valid point. Speaking of which, you found that that documentary, right?
Yeah, it's called Cowspiracy.
The Cowspiracy.
Yes.
Your teacher made you watch that.
Yep. As part of the curriculum.
Was it now? Was it like a tongue in cheek kind of thing, or was like your teacher serious?
You gotta watch this. It was serious, and he used it to talk about climate change.
Was your teacher a vegetarian?
It wouldn't surprise me. He was a typical liberal.
Wow.
So,
okay. Wow. In a school in Huntsville, Alabama, no less.
Yep.
Wow. I got a caller on the line. Let me jump on it real quick. Jeffro from Indiana. Hey man, are you doing better today than you were yesterday?
I'm always doing better when I'm home.
That's true. You're home today. That's right. Yesterday was your Friday, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Thank goodness. I got in about 11:45 last night after sitting all that time.
God, that's just wrong. Somebody needs to just be like hearing from somebody about that. What you think about today, man? I had two topics today. Besides sports, we also had the you could smell their fear, and then the other one is lab-grown meat.
Well, you know, I'm thinking maybe all these Democrats have lab-grown brains or whatever, because it's kind of they've been indoctrinated somewhere in some kind of a lab. You know what I mean?
It's like, and tastes like chicken. But the whole thing, I mean, to me, it really smacks of where we are. That during the Biden administration, $500 million taxpayer dollars were assigned to the potential to grow lab-grown meat for our military. That just boggles my mind.
Yeah, that's like battery operated tanks too. You know, that's going to go over well too. But but the only thing I'm thinking is that, you know, I want to see this play to the end and everything, and possibly where it would get the technology and improve the technology where they could have cloned lab grown organs. So like if you need a kidney or if you need a liver or a lung or even a heart. You could have a genetically paired, organ that if yours fails, you know, they got one there and you don't have to take rejection drugs to have it.
At that point, we're one step away from Westworld.
No, Westworld was androids and they weren't real. They were robots.
Was it Westworld? Oh, that's right. The sequel to Westworld was Future World. That's the one that had the cloning in it. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think we're going to be there, but there's going to have to be some rules of ethics applied to this. I mean, when the whole thing with Dolly the sheep came out, when they cloned a sheep and it freaked people out because they realized they really made a living being out of it, we're going to wind up having dinosaurs being cloned from DNA like something out of a movie.
I mean, we've got clones already, basically. I mean, if you're an identical twin, you're virtually a clone of each other. So
God did that cloning. One.
Well, that's what I mean. That's a natural cloning. But, you still have the same DNA, have the same everything, you know. And like I say, that was a natural occurrence.
Well, you know.
A God-given thing.
I think, I'll be honest with you, I think it's coming. But I think that they had better, it's kind of like AI. They'd better get a hold of it before it really gets going. Otherwise, people are going to be cloning their children. They're going to be cloning their spouses. They're going to be cloning the next president. You know, they're going to be developing the clone wars like on Star Wars. I mean, it's going to be, you know, let's go ahead and build soldiers so we don't have to go ahead and send our people to war. I think it's rife for disaster.
You don't need those. Have you seen the Tesla robots lately? Oh my gosh.
That's coming too.
Amazing.
That is coming too. All right, man. I got to get a few text messages in before we run out of time. You enjoy your weekend, brother.
Have a good weekend, Phil.
Right, we'll see you. The grades are in. John from Huntsville says Phil gets an A+ for his fantastic performance. John Wall and Katie Britt both get an A++ for their equally spectacular performances. However, today's winner is obviously, Obviously.
Obviously.
JP with an A triple plus. Congratulations. And he says, I would have given you a quadruple A plus, but that's just a fairy tale because it doesn't exist in this world. By the way, JP, number 2, Oregon or Purdue, number 13, BYU or Oklahoma State.
Oregon kills Purdue, BYU wins also.
There you go. Wiley from Gunnarsson says, I have eaten armadillo some years ago. It's surprisingly good. Of approximately 15 grilled that weekend in Texas, not a piece of meat was left and 2 kegs of beer were consumed. All right, I want to know which came first, the 2 kegs of beer or the armadillo? That's he says, yep, armadillo over lab-grown meat for me. Okay, fair enough. Bruce from – you ever seen the movie Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Nope.
Oh, have you not?
Mm-mm.
This may have to be a mandatory watcher. There's a scene in there Gopher Everett, they found a gopher and decided to cook it up over the fire. Gopher Everett, and there's another one where there's sitting there with some folks at the farm, and it's during the Depression, and he says, thank you for cooking up this stew, cousin. He goes, well, had to, but I do believe this horse is starting to turn.
That's funny.
Bruce of Springville, why are they replacing the real thing? Don't you know I'm a member of PETA, People Eating Tasty Animals? Nice.
I'm also a proud member. 21 years been a proud member, actually.
Of PETA, the People Eating mm-hmm. Tasty Animals?
Yep.
Nice. Cameron from Decatur says, think about it. $500 million. What good that money could do if just spent in the right places? Listen, brother, that's you just mentioned one of the demises of government. If they can do stuff like this, it means they have too much of your money. I'm just saying. Mike from Florence has texted in. He says, I guess if we ever get to the point that we can do a head transplant, the world will end. Same goes for unlimited cloning. I guess if you're ready for that, it won't be so bad. All I know is this. They better get the rules of ethics in place and govern it strictly. And then Jimmy from Del Rose, Tennessee, says the government's been cloning $100 bills for years. nice. All right, listen, you guys have an amazing weekend out there. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be beautiful weather. The fall is finally here. But just keep in mind, We've got literally just a tad over 2 weeks, literally going to be through with this election. The season is upon us. We're in the final push. It's like we're in the red zone. Do not let up. And oh, by the way, don't forget, there's more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.